Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 200 for comics originally released on June 8th, 2011. Now, by my count, Bob, we have not only done 200 DC comics, 200 Marvel comics, 200 other comics. I think we've done another 100 comics on top of that, just as bonus features, you know, scattered across the episodes. So that puts us somewhere around 700 comics that we've done in-depth reviews on just on these episodes, not including, you know, the back issue spotlights and all the other kinds of episodes.
Yep, and then we'll be adding to that total when we review all 52 of DC's new number ones in September on some special episodes.
Yes, that should be very fun to do, actually. I'm looking forward to it. There are a couple that I think they've got some great ideas on. There are a couple I'm thinking, wow, that was a very bold move to choose that.
And let's remind everyone, for the previews episode next month, we're going to try to do a special edition, and hopefully we'll get people to talk about all 52 of the new ones. I have the thread out there. So please go take a look at the thread and look at the thread on the forum for the September solicits and pick and send in some clips, but sooner than next month, because we'd like to get that DC one out in advance. Since all the solicits are up online now, I was thinking if we could have people get clips in by sometime around June 29th, that would allow us to do that special previews episode in advance of our regular preview cycle.
And I think that's a great idea because, I mean, this is obviously big, big news. I mean, we're getting a new Action Comics number one, a new Superman, a new Batman, a new Detective Comics number one. So, I mean, there's tons of great stuff, but there's also the ones that people are going to overlook. And if we can get you guys, our listeners, to kind of come back and say, you know, which of the 52 you're excited about, and ideally, if we can cover all 52, I've got to imagine that one of our listeners is excited about each and every one of these. I mean, we've got a pretty diverse listener base out there with very different tastes, and if we can do that episode, then we've kind of freed up the preview spotlight itself for everybody else. And particularly the people in the back half of previews are likely to get overlooked that month, and that would be a real shame.
Yeah.
You know, there's good stuff coming out from everybody. This is a very risky move that DC's making. We want to help them. And frankly, even if we're not helping DC, we're helping the retailers by getting as much information out there about these 52 titles. Because I know I'm not going to be able to follow all of the interviews, all of those things, to find out really what's happening in each of those 52 new number ones. So I'm looking to you guys, the listeners, to kind of help out with that.
Yeah, and as you see an interesting online interview, post it to the thread, because I'm also taking some of those, not some, as I see them, or if somebody mentions them, I take and put those links into that master post that covers all 52 of the new number ones. Again, that's kind of your one-stop shopping place. You can go there, you can see the pictures, you can see the full solicit, and if there's an interview that I know about online, you can get a link right to that interview from there also.
Cool. Now, let's go ahead and jump into the books for this week. Now, starting us off in DC is Flashpoint Emperor Aquaman number one, and this looks to be, you know, one of the key characters for the whole Flashpoint thing, because they've really kind of put the whole, you know, Atlantis versus Amazons war, you know, as the main focal point, or one of the main focal points for Flashpoint. And, you know, I've been reading all the Flashpoint stuff. I read Booster Gold 45, the other couple that came out this week, which were, what, Citizen Cold, Deathstroke and the Curse of the Ravager, and Frankenstein and the Creatures of the Unknown. And I've got to say that, you know, for something that is a three-month-long, four-month-long, or whatever, universe, really, they're doing a lot of really good stuff, kind of building up the backstory, and there's enough interweaving of the titles in a good kind of a way where they kind of reinforce each other and build that bigger tapestry than any one of them could do on their own.
You know, something else that I noticed in picking these up, you know, because this week I had to pick up all four of those titles off the rack because none of them were ones that I pre-ordered blind. You know, as people remember, I only pre-ordered 6 of the 16, but I've been looking at them on the shelf. And as I've been looking at them, I've actually been impressed by all of them so far, you know, 8 that have come out. And so I picked up, I hadn't pre-ordered any of the 4 that came out this week. And I ended up looking at all of them. They all look good. I bought all of them. I read all of them. And I was actually very impressed with all of them. And what I liked about Emperor Aquaman, and this applies to the other stories as well, is that you're coming in the middle of something, because obviously this Flashpoint universe has a history that extends prior to, you know, a narrative history that extends prior to these number one Flashpoint issues. So you're kind of coming into a world midstream, but the writers have done a really good job of not making it feel like you're walking into the middle of a movie. They've done a very good job of giving you the information that you need to enjoy these stories, and you're picking up little bits and pieces as you go along. Now, you know, even though you and I have been reading DC Comics for a really long time, and get some of the, you know, I mean, there are some little references here and there. I'm sure there are little Easter eggy kind of things that I'm not getting that are buried in here, but I'm still enjoying the titles.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about that whole backstory, and there's definitely the, okay, how did this world get to where it's at now question. So they're giving us a lot of that in many of these issues. But what I find really entertaining is not only are we getting to explore this brand new world that's surprisingly, you know, sophisticated, deep, and interconnected, but we're also getting things that are getting pulled kind of out of the storage closet at DC, characters we haven't seen really for a decade or two or more, and getting inserted into these stories in a way that if you read them back in the day, it's like, hey, that's cool, kind of that Easter egg thing. But if you haven't, you're not losing anything. You're not missing out. It's not like you're not getting the in-joke. It's done in a way that's equally accessible to everybody. And I really got to give my hats off to really everybody connected to the Flashpoint stuff, the writers, the artists, the editors, you know, the whole creative team, because this is turning out to be a very cohesive narrative universe that they're building up here. And I'm liking how things that happen in one book are kind of sort of referenced, but not in a, hey, go buy this kind of a way. It's it shows you how this is really one world.
Yeah, that's another good point you make, is that you can read all these stories, but I think that even though the reference is there to add that extra little bit of narrative value, if you choose to go, you know, read more books, I don't get the feeling like you have to read them to enjoy the book that you're choosing to read. So they're not holding you hostage to have to buy extra books, which is good.
To me, this is how a shared universe ought to be. Something where you get enough of the references to the other stuff to see that it is part of a bigger whole. And if you want more, there's more to be had, but not in a way where it feels like, well, gosh, I've got to go read more to understand what I just had, you know, and that level of accessibility and stuff gives me a lot of hope and enthusiasm for this new relaunch of the DC whole line, really, coming in September. Because if they take this kind of narrative style, which is very open and accessible, and can keep doing that, you know, essentially, well, forever, which is going to be hard, I get that, but it's something that's going to make comics so much more accessible and easy entry points and stuff for people down the line. You know, again, this is something, like you said, we're coming in the middle of a universe and having to find out, okay, what changed, when did it change, why did it change, how is it playing out, what's the current status quo of all of these characters, and I'm really enjoying it. Now, with this one, I'm kind of curious if we're going to see some of the other Aquaman characters, you know, any of the Aqualads, the Aquagirls, Dolphin, you know, any of the other characters that have been so associated with this character over the decades. You know, because there's a big tapestry here to be played with.
It seems like maybe you would in some way or another. I mean, because you got Vulko, you haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah.
You have Mira, you know, and they're, you know, another thing about this issue is they're kind of jumping back and forth in time a little bit. But it was done in a way that was relatively easy to follow. I wasn't confused reading the issue. Let me put it that way. I've read comics where they're kind of doing the jumps back and forth in time, and you kind of look at it sometimes, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, where am I? What am I doing? And I didn't have any problem with this one.
To me, this was told kind of like an episode of Lost, where you've got what's going on with Aquaman, which would be in the Lost episode, kind of what's currently happening there on the island. And then you've got that series of flashbacks that start at one point in time and kind of move forward, giving you the pieces of the backstory that are relevant to kind of understand how certain things got the way they are. You know, so I thought it was well done. And yeah, there are times where that kind of jumping in back and forth in time can be very, you know, disorienting and stuff. I mean, overall, I thought this was good. You know, there are a couple of things that I don't want to say I felt were telegraphed, but it's like I could see where they were going with a couple of things. You know, we get the geopulse emitter. It's like, I bet I know where they're going. And okay, they did that, but then they took it a step further and gave me a couple other payoffs that I wasn't expecting. It's like, ooh, that's cool. You know, so I think for those of us that have that background in the DC Universe, there's a lot of cool Easter eggs. I think for people coming at it new, I'm hoping that they're finding this very, you know, entertaining and enjoyable. I'm, you know, like I said, I was very pleased with this.
Yeah, I really liked it. I think I know reasons why, but I can't not give it a 5. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I really liked the art. And as a matter of fact, give a shout out, you know, Tony Bedard's writing this, who's done such a great job on Green Lantern Corps and the now defunct Rebels series. The penciler is Ardian Syaf. Inker is Vicente Cifuentes. These guys did a really good job on the art in this issue.
There was one thing about the art that I was just kind of noticing as we were talking here, because I had the story open to a couple of pages before the end where we're at Rome 8 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and you see that guy kind of standing in the foreground, and then go to the second page of the story.
Uh-huh.
And if you look in the upper left there, I think
he's floating around.
And it's that kinds of little things that tie things together that are not, oh wow, he's an important character. No, he's literally a character in the background floating by. But those sorts of things tie things together, give it a sense of realism for the narrative world that help get you immersed in it. So I can totally give this a 5 out of 5. I think they're doing some great stuff here. I'm really enjoying Flashpoint, and this gives me a lot of hope for the new DC universe that we're going to see soon.
And just in general, I mean, you know, I was really skeptical coming into Flashpoint, you know, based on the way that they chose to solicit them and all that kind of stuff. I was not bought into the whole event from the beginning, you know. But
I wouldn't say you weren't bought in. I would say you were almost sold against.
But, you know, I did say I'll check them out on the stands, right? And I think that's the point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, a lot of people make judgments based on the solicits, but then they never give that book a chance. I mean, when it's a small book, you kind of have to make the choice on the solicit because you're probably not going to see it on the rack at most comic shops if you don't pre-order it. But, you know, I think this will apply similarly to the relaunch of the 52 DC titles. I mean, I did not think going in that I was going to like all these different Flashpoint titles, but I'm picking them up, I'm reading them, and I got to give DC credit. I mean, they're winning me over on these, and they're doing a really good job on them. And, you know, I have strong hopes for the 52. I mean, if I had to pick based on the solicits alone, I'd maybe get like 25 of them or something, you know, about half. Well, we're going to read all 52 of them, and we'll see how many I really enjoy coming out of those 52. You know, maybe they'll surprise me, because the thing that I maybe you'll even find is I might not like something that I thought I would have liked just based on the solicit, and I might really like something I didn't think I'd like in a million years, again, based on just a few words in a solicit. So, just want to encourage people that if you have the chance, if you're near a comic book shop, go in and check some of these things out. Flip through them, read a few pages, you know, because, boy, I'm really enjoying a lot of these titles. They're doing a good job.
Well, and again, that goes back to why we want to do that special preview spotlight episode on the whole, you know, DC 2.0 lineup. It's like you said, there's 52 of these titles, and that's just kind of a information overload to a degree. But if people can be pointing out stuff that's not in the solicit that would get people interested, whatever, and again, we'll be following up with actual reviews of the entire, you know, lineup of the new set of titles and stuff in September. Because, I mean, there are a couple that, were we not reviewing them, there are a couple I'm not sure if I would have picked up or not. A few that, yeah, I'd probably pick up the first issue with no plans on getting the others. But, you know, there are a couple where, like that Eye Vampire, that's not something that's in my wheelhouse, not really an easy sell for me. But, you know, hey, I'm willing for them to prove me wrong. I may love most of these titles, that one included and stuff. It's one of those things that when I look at the sales charts, so often I see that first issue and then down from there. Mm-hmm. So when people don't get that first issue, I mean, that's setting kind of that glass ceiling, not for every title, but for most. You know, and hopefully we can help these publishers and these creators start bucking that trend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Move on to our Marvel book.
Yes, and we had an unscheduled replacement from our commercial at the end of last episode. Let's just say I screwed up. I thought I had ordered Ghost Rider 0.1. Apparently I didn't open my DCBS box. And normally it wouldn't be a problem because normally we record on Saturday. I get my box on Tuesday, and I would have just gone out to the store and picked it up, and, you know, we would have just gone on. Unfortunately, John's busy this weekend, so we're recording this about 90 minutes after I opened my box on Tuesday afternoon, so I didn't have a chance to go out, so we switched to an alternate Marvel book that we both did have. We haven't done it for a while. This is New Avengers number 13. I think the last issue we did of this was number 7, so it's been a while.
Yeah. I had mixed feelings on this issue, and part of it came down to there was one exchange, or really a line or two of dialogue from one of the characters that just set me on edge. It made the character feel out of character and just not right. Basically, I mean, Ben Grimm, member of the Fantastic Four, now a member of the Avengers, he's been around the Marvel Universe as about as long as there's been the Marvel Universe to be around in. And he's always doing the sweet petunia, the homily, not the homily, but you know what I mean. The
right.
Nice lack of profanity for his verbiage and stuff. And there are a couple of places in here where I just thought, one, he was surprisingly unprofessional in how he claims he had acted, and just the way he phrased it really irked me. And it just kind of, it took me a little bit out of the story and stuff. To me, that was a minor point, but it was something that when you're dealing with some of these characters that are the family-friendly, been on the cartoons, in the underoos, you know, all that kind of stuff, I think there's a certain responsibility that the creators have to respect that aspect of those characters. If they want to get a bit edgier with some of these other characters, you know, be it Cage or some of these others, I'll give them a little leeway. But for some of the Saturday morning cartoon crowd, so to say, it just felt a little wrong. A lot of this issue focused around Mockingbird having been, you know, gravely injured at the end of last issue, and is she going to live or not? And that aspect of the story I really liked, because this is an issue that will have ramifications, period. There's no way it can't. And I think when readers say they want stories to matter, this is the kind of thing they mean. They want a story that matters to a couple of the characters in a very real way. I mean, think about it. If you're writing up the entry for a character in the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, or their autobiography or biography, or, you know, whatever, are the events in the story important enough that you kind of have to mention them? And ideally, I mean, not every story is going to be that important that, you know, to every character or whatever, that it's got to be mentioned in their history. Just by nature, not everything is top of the stack material, okay? But it's one of those things that if you've got something that's important enough to a character, and again, the events here, hugely important to Mockingbird, probably fairly important to the Hawkeye, too. Some of the other characters, yes, it's happening, but again, you wouldn't expect to read it in their entry in the handbook of the Marvel Universe. Once you start getting stuff that is kind of those historic moments, the Secret Invasion, the Civil War, the No More Mutants from House of M, you know, where it's a moment that almost needs to be mentioned for every character. In that respect, if a story matters that much, it doesn't really matter at all. And I think at sometimes the editors at Marvel and DC are thinking, oh, they want stories that matter. Well, let's go have a major event. And I'm like, no, we want something that touches the characters individually and has important ramifications for them, you know. And again, not every story has to be of that level of importance to every character, and it shouldn't be. But if each story is of that level of importance to some character, that's what makes stories matter. You know, and I think this really succeeded in many respects in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I didn't, now that you mention it on the thing, I noticed his kind of like whiny, you know, thing, which he's not usually, you know, that kind of whiny, you know, as he was. I didn't really notice the other part. That was one thing. But I mean, other than that, I really liked the issue. This is a good example of good Brian Michael Bendis. You know, he gets a little self-indulgent sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this one, I think, was a really good example of why Bendis is where he is and the position he is as kind of like the leading architect of the Marvel Universe. You know, this kind of a story. He did just a really good job on it.
Overall, I would agree with that. The whole 1959 Avengers stuff just isn't really doing much for me.
I actually like that part a lot. I love Chaykin's art. I think it's really great for delineating that time period. And I actually have been particularly enjoying the 1950s stuff.
I guess part of it for me is I'm not a huge Howard Chaykin fan by any stretch, so I think that's some of it. But I think part of it is it just doesn't feel very Avenger-y to me. And part of it's the choice of characters. Part of it's it feels very Nick Fury-like, and I'm good with that. And in that respect, it's working cool. But for it to be kind of the secret backstory of the Avengers, it's, I don't know, it's just not quite working for me yet. Now, I do think they had some really good use of Nick Fury and the Infinity Formula and stuff here. And, you know, I really wonder if they're kind of starting to set Nick Fury up to kind of step back into his classic role in the Marvel Universe, and we may see him heading up S.H.I.E.L.D. or a S.H.I.E.L.D.-like agency soon, I think.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely setting that up. So anyway, I gave this issue a strong 4 out of 5.
Yeah, for me it was a 4.
But, you know, there's a reason why Bendis is how he is, you know.
Oh, yeah, and he's instrumental in the Marvel Universe and has been for many, many, many years. And, I mean, he's very much setting the tone and the direction of the universe. So, okay, next up we've got Terry Moore's Echo number 30. This is the final issue of that series. And, you know, this has been a very, you know, good read throughout. And it's one of those where I always get to the end of the issue thinking, you know, come on, I want some more because I just want more of the story. This is one where I thought it was a nice, strong ending for the series. There was a lot of action, a lot of good character moments. There was kind of the right number of pages after the big, you know, action sequence and stuff at the end to kind of give things kind of a clean ending, kind of a, okay, this is where characters are kind of landing after the dust settles. And I was really impressed with this. This was very strong stuff.
Yeah, I loved the issue. I loved the series. I don't go back and look at that little the big climax several times before I kind of could figure out what the heck was really going on. But I do like how they kind of ended it, and the little denouement after the end, you know, where they kind of show the people after the fact. I don't know. Have you read Strangers in Paradise yet?
No, I haven't. And that was one of the notes I made, is that I need to read that set of trades you gave me, because you gave me the whole set.
Yeah, I did. The interesting part is it wasn't in this issue, but it was a couple of issues. Well, actually, you know,
it was in 28 that they established that there's one of the characters that's
right,
common.
Yeah, and it's actually she's the one who's sitting on the beach with the the one not in the striped shirt. She was in Strangers in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a cross-continuity of characters, so it is set in the same narrative universe, which I thought was kind of cool. Not like overtly so, you know, but, you know, it had that touch point, which was neat.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I can't go into too many details because you don't want to spoil the conclusion of this 30 issues, you know, story that's been going out there. But boy, this is something to, I would definitely recommend people pick up and get in trade, or, you know, they're going to ultimately, I'm sure he's going to have some big hardcover that, you know, you could do a big omnibus that puts all 30 of these issues together.
Yeah, definitely.
Quite easily.
That would make sense to do. There are aspects of this that remind me a little of The Sword in terms of the narrative structure of, okay, you've got something that by no stretch of the imagination could be considered a mini-series, yet has a definite beginning, middle, and end that was definitely thought out ahead of time, and it's not just, okay, I'm bored, let's end it. I mean, Terry Moore was clearly going towards this ending the entire time. And I think there's something to be said for that type of series and having a couple of more of those come out to where, you know, again, you've got something that's got that bigger canvas, but not that unlimited canvas that the ongoing titles tend to sprawl out into out of control.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the ending here, especially the last panel. I thought that was a perfect last, you know, closing panel.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I don't understand what happened to Ivy between the event and then the last part.
Well, I think it's clear what happened, but not the how, yeah, exactly. Why, or
that's right. I meant to say exactly that. It's like you can see what happened. I don't know why it happened. You know, yeah. Just in reverse. And again, I can't really say without ruining the thing. So it's kind of like being vague. But
that's,
you know,
kind of what I liked about the ending, because it wasn't the butler did it and here's how ending. It's not one of those where they felt the need to explain everything away. Terry Moore does what he does. And yeah, there are a couple of things that are not just, oh, well, of course, it's obviously this or whatever. You got to give it some thought. And I'm not going to claim to really have answers for some of the things that happen there at the end, or even theories or even guesses.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that cool. It gives it a sense of not everything gets tied off in a little bow, but it still has that kind of a clean ending where you're not left feeling, but wait, what about, you know, so.
Right. The series and the issue, I give a 5 out of 5. You know, Terry Moore is, you know, he's pretty much a modern master on this stuff. I put him up with creators like Dave Sim and... who else is in that? Stan Sakai with his Usagi Yojimbo, and, you know, even, you know, the likes. And you got to really put, he's in the category of the writer artist, right? You know, there are lots of writers and there are a lot of artists. This guy does both. I mean, he's like a one man show. He's putting this whole thing together. And, you know, he does a phenomenal job of it. And, you know, he's a master. So.
I mean,
definitely
not,
check this out.
There's not even a letterer credited, so he's doing the lettering too. I mean, that I love when they've got somebody who can do everything, because it gives such a cohesive vision to the thing that you just don't find otherwise. I mean, for me, this was a very strong 4 out of 5. Couldn't quite give it that 5, but certainly definitely recommend this. It's really good stuff.
And I would say, you know, anything that's in here, Terry Moore put it in there. You know, he didn't, you know, you can't say, oh, well, somebody else did that. You know, every pen stroke pretty much that's in these issues, he put there.
Yeah.
I mean, he has Brian Miller from Hi-Fi coloring the covers. You know, other than that, and his wife, I think, is the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is him.
Well, and I don't think a single issue of this was late. You know, it came out like clockwork, and it just kept going. In a good way. So that's something that, you know, I look at some of these other creators that are either just writing or just doing the art or whatever, and some of these other titles that just can't seem to keep a schedule. And here's a guy who's doing this, you know, solo. You know, his wife's helping, you know, like you said, doing the editing, the publishing, or whatever, just kind of, you know, dealing with some of the bookkeeping, I think. But again, no delays, no whatever happened to the title aspect. So I got a lot of respect for just the business side of things, too, on that.
In other news, if anybody didn't see it come out this week, you might want to check out Samurai's Blood from Image. It's one of these ones that are through the Benaroya Publishing through Image, and it's $1 for the first issue. Full-length first issue. It's a samurai story. It seems to be pretty historically accurate. So it's kind of a straight story, but it's a little twist on your classic samurai story. It's of a genre of samurai stories where, you got the evil guys and they come and they wipe out a village, and you got some young people and they, want to get revenge for, what happened to their town, So that's a subgenre, I think, of the samurai ones. But it's very well done. It's got nice art, well done story, and for $1, you can't go wrong in checking out that first issue. So you might want to roll by your comic shop if you didn't see it or didn't notice it, and see if you can pick up an issue of that.
I've actually got that sitting in my stack to be read. I haven't gotten it to it yet this week, but I like how they're coming out with those first issues at $1. I think that's a really smart move.
Yeah, I mean, it gives people a chance to try it out with very low risk.
So I got a couple of more of those pins or whatever for the Flashpoint stuff with the various logos of the different characters. I know some people may be going nuts over those personally.
I like them.
They're not doing anything for me. I find that to be funny.
I like them. And as a matter of fact, my comic shop got kind of hosed out because Diamond did not ship the pins to them, but they shipped them to other stores in the area. And people were picking up the comics. And, if it was like a regular customer, he's like, oh, I'll get the pins in. They'll, be in. You can pick them up next time you come in, or, next week or whatever like this. And, they're like, fine. But I actually saw people who are not regular customers put the comics back on the rack to go buy them somewhere else so they can get the pins.
That is just so wrong. Because, they should be buying it for the story, not for the...
Well, don't knock collectors. it keeps the thing rolling. We all have our little... collectible peccadillos. And if you want to collect a set of the pins, you don't want to buy the comic without the pin necessarily, because that's the only way theoretically to get it right now. So I think that, Diamond really screws up, because there are people that are going to want to do that,
So. Yeah, but again, I'd prefer people buy the comic for the story, not for the, pin or even the rings that came with the Blackest Night stuff. I love the rings. I thought they were great, but I'd rather people still buy the story for the story. I think that's one of the reasons why comic sales are where they're at right now, and I think that is one of the reasons why we're getting this new, DC 2.0 lineup of titles in September. If things were selling, if things were clicking with the readers, they'd stay with what they got.
Well, it's the law of unintended consequences. People can be buying it. I don't think you got people who are buying the $3 comic book just to get a little cheap 10-cent pin. But at the same time, if you want to collect a set of pins, to go along with your comics, you don't want to buy, the comic without the pin, because then, you might have to go buy the comic again somewhere else.
No, and I get that. I get that.
So, the only way to defeat that is to not do those kind of promos in the first place, right?
And there's something to be said for that, too. I remember when comics used to be sold just as comics, not as variant covers or other giveaways and stuff like that. And the funny thing is, they sold so much better back then. But different times, different market. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That was pretty much it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Flashpoint, Wonder Woman and the Furies number 1 from DC, Captain America Corps number 1 from Marvel, and Executive Assistant Iris number 0 from Aspen Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.